Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show. And the host of the program is its founder and guiding light, Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. And on today's program, Carol will be speaking with Zach Unger. He's an investigative journalist, a firefighter, a paramedic, and the author of a book titled Never Look a Polar Bear in the Eye, a family field trip to the Arctic's edge in search of adventure, truth, and mini marshmallows. That's coming up in just a few minutes, but let's kick it off now with yet another conversation rendered by Carol Marks. This time she's speaking with Jonathan Haidt. He is the Thomas Cooley Professor of Ethical Leadership at New York University's Stern School of Business, and he's going to talk to Carol about his new book titled The Righteous Mind, Why Good People Are Divided by Politics and Religion, published by Vintage Books.
Now, you've always been interested in moral psychology. What is moral psychology, and how do our emotions drive our reasoning? And does that result in most people using kind of our gut instinct rather than reasoning and making their decisions?
Well, moral psychology is the psychology of human moral nature. And, you know, in psychology, we sort of divide up human life, and maybe one person's an expert on sexuality, maybe one person's an expert on language. I picked morality as my topic. And when I began graduate school at the University of Pennsylvania, everybody at the time was studying moral reasoning. Why do some people cheat? Why do some people hurt other people? Well, there must be something wrong with their reasoning. And I just didn't buy it. I had grown up with two sisters, very close to me in age, and we fought every day, 12 times a day, and it was all very passionate stuff. And we used our reasoning, but we used it like lawyers. We used it to defend ourselves, to attack each other. We didn't really care what was true. We just wanted to get the most candy we could get. So when I was in graduate school, I began looking much more carefully at the moral emotions. And what I found is that emotions drive our reasoning. Now, this is not a new discovery. The philosopher David Hume said this in the 18th century. He said, reason is and ought only to be the slave of the passions and can never pretend to any other office than to serve and obey them. And I think that principle helps us understand all the ridiculous reasoning coming out of Washington or coming out of anybody that you disagree with.
And you looked at the moral issues using some very interesting, it was a very interesting metaphor involving the taste receptors on our tongue to illustrate the different issues that liberals and social conservatives care about. And I thought it was fascinating. So what are the different moral receptors on our tongue?
Right. So when I was in graduate school, I was trying to understand, why does morality vary across countries? Why is morality so different in India, in rural India? I did a little bit of field work in eastern India. Why is it so different in different populations? Yet at the same time, you find people all over the world caring not just about fairness, but also about food and food taboos and sexual taboos. And the best analogy I found was thinking about our sense of taste. So we all have the same five taste buds on our tongue: sweet, sour, salt, bitter, and MSG, actually, sort of a meaty, savory taste. Yet, every culture creates its own cuisine. And so Indian food is different from Mexican food, is different from food in the American Midwest. They use different spices. They rely differently on the different taste buds. And I've found that it's the same story for morality. So my colleagues and I believe that the best candidates for being the taste buds, the moral taste buds, are issues of care and harm and nurturance, that's one. Issues of fairness and reciprocity and cheating, that's two. Issues of group loyalty versus betrayal is three. Issues of liberty and oppression is four. Issues of authority versus subversion is five. And issues of sanctity and purity versus degradation is six. And what we found, we have a research site. Listeners can go to yourmorals.org. And if you register there, you can take some surveys. We give you very good feedback, show you exactly what your scores are. And what we found at that site is that people say that they're politically liberal tend to get very high scores on care and fairness and liberty, but they really kind of reject, or they don't value issues of group loyalty, respect for authority, and purity or sanctity. Conservatives, social conservatives, in contrast, value all six roughly equally. And that sets us up for understanding the culture war on almost every issue, whether it be gay rights or an amendment to protect the American flag. Conservatives see moral properties that liberals just don't see. You know, liberals say, well, it's just a piece of cloth. Why do we need to to amend the Constitution? Or when two men have sex, how does that possibly undermine other people's marriages? So we get a lot of just misunderstanding across the political divide.
So getting down to the nitty-gritty of it all, why do you say liberals and conservatives are like yin and yang? And is there any hope there?
So I began my life as a sort of a standard liberal. I grew up in Scarsdale, New York, a suburb of New York City. I'm Jewish. I went to an Ivy League school. Everybody around me was politically liberal. Everybody loved Roosevelt. Everybody hated Reagan. And I thought that conservatives were idiots and racists who just wanted low taxes because they didn't like welfare or something like that. And that's the world I was in for many years. But because I was trying to study morality and see, trying to really get inside the head of everybody and see how the world looked to them, what I found is that each side is really wise about certain kinds of threats and is blind to others. So right now, one of the biggest problems we face is this rising inequality. Everybody's working harder, but all the gains go to the top 1%, and there's really something wrong with that, not just morally wrong, but it undercuts the work ethic. It makes us a weaker country.
And liberals are really
upset about it. They're trying to do something about it, and conservatives just don't see it. Same for global warming. Liberals see it. Conservatives just don't see it. But conversely, conservatives see a number of threats that liberals don't see. One of the biggest is the decline of marriage. We're almost at the point where half of American kids are not going to live their life, their childhood, with two parents. They're going to experience divorce, or they were born out of wedlock to begin with. We're actually in 10, 20 years, most kids will be born out of wedlock. And liberals say, well, you know, lots of family structures are fine. Who cares? You know, we don't want to judge anyone. But it turns out that marriage is really, really good for kids, not just economically, but in terms of giving them a structured, ordered environment where they can learn self-control. Now, conservatives have been screaming about that since the 60s, and liberals have not heard it. And it turns out declining marriage is one of the big causes of rising inequality, because if your parents aren't married, your dad's going to take off at some point. You're going to be raised much poorer than you otherwise would. You're not going to have every advantage. You're not going to rise into the top 5 or 10%. So, you know, what I've found is that we really need to listen to both sides. Each side sees threats the other doesn't. Each side values some virtues that the other doesn't fully respect.
Well, here's my important question, Jonathan. Do you have any practical suggestions for a way to help alleviate these inbred really biases that our legislators have, and their tendency to appeal primarily to their base because it's easier? You think that these fixes are going to have to be institutional and not individual?
Yes, absolutely. The problem is not that bad people are going to Washington. Our congressmen and senators are generally hardworking people. They're generally very intelligent, and they generally want to solve problems. They didn't go there just to make money, although that is a problem, but they went there to fix problems, and then they're all frustrated because they can't do it. They can't get anything done. So the game is broken. It's not that the players are bad people. The game is completely broken. And there are a number of very simple fixes. I would urge listeners to go to nolabels.org. That, I think, is the best organization in terms of proposing some very simple fixes. You know, we all know that we need campaign finance reform. We need to stop gerrymandering of our congressional districts. But those changes, that's going to take 10 or 20 years to get those done. And they might never be doable because of the Supreme Court. No Labels says, all right, we can't wait 10 or 20 years. We need to do some things tomorrow, today, you know, things that will make it easier for Congress to work. So things like changing the legislative calendar so that they actually have to stay in Washington during the week, and then they meet each other. That used to happen until the 1990s. Newt Gingrich changed the calendar so that now congressmen, they do all their work from Tuesday afternoon through Thursday morning. They don't live in Washington. They don't know each other. They don't go to parties together. Their spouses don't come to Washington. So we've asked our politicians to basically do politics without personal relationships, and that can't be done. It's just gridlock. They hate each other.
That's Jonathan Haidt, interviewed by Carol Marks. His book is titled The Righteous Mind, Why Good People Are Divided by Politics and Religion, and it is published by Vintage Books, and you can find out more by going to asteroidsclub.org. Carol returns in just a moment in conversation with a very interesting man talking about a very, very exciting adventure. His name is Zach Unger. That's next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment.
Hi, this is Jerry Rice. All kids have dreams. Mine was to play professional football, but for some, a medical problem might stand in the way. That's why Shriners Hospitals are so important. Shriners is a network of 22 hospitals providing some of the world's best orthopedic and burn medical care, totally free of charge. And there's a Shriner Hospital helping kids from this area. If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055 for more information. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
There are a ton of social networking websites, but one stands apart for a very special reason. This one saves lives. It's MatchingDonors.com. MatchingDonors.com links organ donors with people in need of kidney and other transplants. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. If you've ever considered becoming a living organ donor, or if you're someone in need of an organ transplant, visit MatchingDonors.com, home of the greatest gift of all, the gift of life, MatchingDonors.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is the host of the program, Carol Marks, in conversation now with Zach Unger. He's an investigative journalist, a firefighter, paramedic, and the author of a book titled Never Look a Polar Bear in the Eye, a family field trip to the Arctic's edge in search of adventure, truth, and mini marshmallows, published by DeCapo Press.
Zach, you have a college degree, and you've got a master's in environmental science. So what made you want to write a book about polar bears?
You know, I wanted to have a look at global warming in some way that you could really wrap your arms around. I mean, I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and when I look at the water, you know, it's no higher or closer to the bridge than it ever was when I was a kid. And so I wanted to really find a way to look at global warming in some very immediate way. And so I thought, polar bears, clearly, from everything I've heard, are dying off rapidly, and if I go to the far north, I'll be able to see the immediate effects of global warming.
So that is what you did, and you went to Churchill, Manitoba, Canada, which is a little town on Hudson Bay, and it's a place where tourists and scientists go to study the polar bear in the wild. Now, I understand Manitoba is considered by many to be the worst spot in the country. Why?
Well, you know, that's definitely some people's opinion. It's got the coldest winters, the hottest summers, and the worst mosquitoes anywhere in Canada. And, you know, this is a country that's known for its bad mosquitoes and its cold weather, so the oppressive summers are just an extra added bonus. But, you know, Churchill, Manitoba is flat and gray and desolate, and this little town of 1,000 people is also overrun by about 1,000 polar bears. I mean, there are literally polar bears walking down Main Street. You can look out your window and see polar bears in your front yard. In Churchill, people leave their homes and their cars unlocked, and it's perfectly good form to dive into some stranger's house if you find yourself being chased by a polar bear. So it's really a unique set of challenges that most cities don't face.
I would say so. And when the bears gather in Churchill, I guess people wander around. They actually have guns on their shoulders.
Yeah, people carry guns. I mean, polar bears are no joke. They're one of the few animals that will actually stalk and hunt and kill human beings. So people do carry guns, and in fact, there's a phone number you can call, 675-BEAR, if you see a bear, and it brings out a team of conservation officers with guns who will try to scare the bears out of town or, if need be, in very rare occasions, actually destroy the bear.
Now, talking about global warming down the road, I was amazed to learn that polar bears can only eat their favorite food, which is seals, and their blubber, but they need to be out on the ice to find them. And in Hudson Bay, seals don't come ashore to feed the polar bears. They got to go get them. So,
yeah, you know, the way the polar bears hunt is they go out on the ice and they wait for seals to come up in these little air holes. The seals stick their nose up there, and then the polar bears pounce and eat them. But seals don't come up on shore or near the shallows, and so polar bears can only hunt when there is sea ice out on the bay. Now, Hudson Bay is actually ice-free for most of the summer. So for 5 to 6 months a year, the polar bears are on land and not really eating very much. I mean, they'll eat the occasional goose or caribou or something like that, but their dominant food is seals, and they are essentially starving for about 5 months a year.
Getting back to all those tourists which come to Churchill and raise the population of the town from 900 to 10,000, they come to observe the polar bears. Would you agree that the accommodations they have certainly aren't luxurious? And what are tundra buggies used for, and what is it like to be in one and try to observe the polar bears?
Right. Well, I mean, Churchill is definitely not Paris, and the accommodations are quite rustic. And people spend a huge amount of money to go up there and sort of check the polar bears off their life list, and they don't really care about, you know, the quality of the food or the lodging. But the way that people go out to see polar bears is on these tundra buggies, which are basically these giant buses with these wheels that are, you know, as tall as I am, and they rumble across the tundra, and the polar bears, you know, will be out there on the tundra just sort of waiting for the ice to freeze up. And so you'll drive around, and the polar bears will come around these tundra buggies and sort of nose around. They're very curious, and often these polar bears will sort of jump up and put their front paws on the windows of the tundra buggy. I mean, these polar bears can be 10 feet tall when they're standing fully straight up. So it's an amazing way to get very, very close to polar bears without sort of the risk of them ripping your head off.
Now, here's what really surprised me, and I know it must have surprised you, as far as, you know, the number of polar bears today that, you know, because we hear so much about their imminent demise, and there are actually more polar bears alive today than 40 years ago. So why is that?
Yeah, it's an interesting fact. There are about 25,000 polar bears on Earth today, and 40 years ago, you know, there's some dispute about the actual numbers, but probably as low as 5 or 10,000 40 years ago. And now what happened was in the early 70s, there was a worldwide hunting ban, and so polar bear populations exploded. And so, you know, this is not to say that polar bears are not going to be affected by global warming or that global warming isn't real, but it's this essentially heartening, cheerful fact that hasn't managed to pierce the public consciousness. So at the moment, polar bear populations are stable. However, they face very grave risks in the future.
Now, were you surprised about what the natives of Churchill had to say about global warming? I mean, what was their take on it?
You know, for the most part, people who live up there in the north feel like they're seeing more polar bears than ever, and they feel like polar bears are doing well. And so, you know, it's a sort of tension between scientists from the south and people who actually live in the north, and these people from the south sort of parachute in to tell the locals that there really aren't that many polar bears. And the locals say, well, I've lived up here my whole life. You know, my grandparents lived here. I know that there are more polar bears now. And so there's a lot of tension between the experts and the locals.
Now, one of the best-named polar bear researchers is Stephen Armstrong.
Yeah.
A lot of his encounters with polar bears have been published in major media publications. And were you surprised about the way media used his findings? And what did he say about the way that the media embellishes them?
You know, so Steve Armstrong is the top polar bear researcher. And I think what happens is that the media is much more interested in an exciting story. I mean, the headline disaster approaches is much more interesting than a headline like conditions are guardedly stable. And so what happens is that the media spectacularizes small tidbits of information. Like, for example, a few years ago there was a few instances of polar bears cannibalizing each other because they were so hungry. Now, this got huge press, but it's just anecdotal evidence. It's just one little thing that happened, and it doesn't tell you about the the strength of the population as a whole. Now, there are 19 different polar bear subpopulations on Earth. About a third of them, we don't know what's going on. About a third of them are in decline, and about a third of them are actually stable or increasing. And so you can cherry-pick that. You can just look at one particular population and tell any story you want. And so part of the problem now is that the media and some advocacy groups and some scientists are cherry-picking the data because they want to use the polar bear as an example and a sort of spokesman for global warming. And the truth is that the science about polar bears doesn't really bear them out. And I understand what they're trying to do, but when you start making these broad points, like all the polar bears are going to be dead, you're making a political point, not a scientific one, and that misserves the public.
So therefore, the fate of the polar bears remains really a tantalizing question about whether their number is going to dramatically drop or remain stable if the oceans warm up, or the other thing is, Zach, are they going to be able to adapt to changing conditions?
I mean, there is some suggestion that polar bears are able to eat a lot more things than seals and that they're going to be able to adapt. And, you know, local effects are really important. There are places in the far north where global warming is actually going to benefit polar bears because right now the ice is too thick for them to hunt and they're going to do better as the ice thins. And, you know, it's very easy to take this point that polar bears are doing well and try and sort of expand it into a point that global warming isn't real. And that's not what I'm trying to do at all. Global warming is absolutely happening. But there are weird local effects and sort of non-linear scientific data points, and polar bears are not as clear a scientific example as global warming.
Here's my innovative solution. If the oceans don't freeze and the polar bears need them to freeze, can't we adopt by building man-made frozen platforms for the bears?
You know, that certainly has been discussed, as has been the idea of flying food up to polar bears. I mean, the thing to realize is that the areas that polar bears live in are so remote and so vast and so difficult to work in that any of these sort of man-made solutions about building them platforms or flying them out food are going to be incredibly expensive. I mean, just mind-bogglingly expensive. And we have to decide, do we want to spend our money saving one species or do we want to save our money battling the root cause of global warming? Or do we want to save our money and spend it on people who are starving?
That's Zach Unger in conversation with Carol Marx. His book is titled Never Look a Polar Bear in the Eye, A Family Field Trip to the Arctic's Edge in Search of Adventure, Truth, and Many Marshmallows, published by DeKalb Press. Go to ZachUnger.com for more information. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray.
check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined at this point in the program by our senior correspondent, Kevin Casey, who, in addition to being a senior correspondent on A Touch of Gray, is the vice president and executive editor of the trade magazine Talkers, Talkers.com, which is the journal of record in the talk radio business and a publication in which I, as well, am involved. And Kevin, we talked a couple of weeks ago about the forthcoming Heavy 100, the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America.
Yes.
And that list is indeed up at talkers.com. And how's the reaction been from the talk radio community to this bold 100 to number one countdown of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America? Does it get a rise out of the people in the business?
Well, it certainly does. And a lot of the folks who are at the top of the list are very happy about that. And a lot of folks who are working, as we might say, in the trenches, in cities around the country that might not be in syndication, who were maybe left off the list or were not as high as they would like to have been, they have something to say about it. And, of course, there's always an outpouring of gratitude from the folks who are high on the list, who feel that they've worked very hard for what they've accomplished, and they're happy to be recognized for their hard work on a list that is so prestigious.
Now, you know, it's interesting. Whenever you create a list or you create, you know, a realm, it becomes an entire universe to many people who look at it, thinking that that's the whole picture.
Right.
So if somebody is in the top 10, for example, and you list the 10, well, number 10 says, I'm at the bottom. I'm not very important. I'm not big. Or if you have 100, somebody's at 90, they go, oh. But the fact is, it's not true. there are thousands of talk show hosts in America. And I find when I talk to the press about this, they go, whoa, how come so-and-so is so low? I go, no one is that low on the 100 most important. There are about 5,000. Would you say there are about 5,000
yeah.
talk show hosts in this country?
Yeah, that's right.
It's hard, though, is it not, to have exact numbers when it comes to talk radio?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, you cut it off. Well, just the fact that we cut these sorts of lists off at 100 is really on its face absurd, but I guess you have to cut it off somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that we're making it 100, right there says something fascinating in that we've delineated 100. Why not 110? I mean, is 101 that much less important than the person who's 95 or 96? And the answer is, of course not, but the fact that it's a numerical list, you have to order it somehow. So, and it's really hard to explain that to people, and it's hard for a lot of people to understand that concept.
And, of course, it's really basically for the sake of stimulating thought, encouraging discussion, sparking debate, all of which makes for a better understanding and a heightened awareness of any particular scene. It's not written in stone.
Right, and the fact that there are 100 talk radio performers in this industry that our publication deems to be the most important really goes to show you how important the medium in and of itself is.
No question about it. Thank you, Kevin Casey. Kevin Casey is a senior correspondent here on A Touch of Gray, and he is the vice president and executive editor of Talkers, the trade publication in the talk radio business, and you can see the Heavy 100, and you can find out all about what's happening behind the scenes in talk radio from an industry point of view. You at talkers.com. I'm Michael Harrison. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here on this great talk radio station in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We're joined at this point in the show by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. Steve Wiseman is going to be talking now with Dr. Daryl Wattis. Dr. Wattis is chief of gastroenterology and internal medicine at Banner Good Samaritan Regional Hospital in Phoenix, and he's going to discuss with Stephen screening for colon cancer.
Colorectal cancer is actually the leading cause of cancer deaths for non-smokers and the third most common cancer in America overall. So I guess it's a pretty serious issue, is that correct?
It is. I think people in the United States have a 1 in 20 chance of developing colon cancer, and which translates into over 140,000 individuals will develop colon cancer this year, and unfortunately about 50,000 people will die.
Okay, so that's the bad news, but the good news is this is an incredibly treatable cancer, is it not, if it's discovered early?
It is, and you know, if it's discovered early, it has a 90% cure rate, and you know, with effective screening, I think we can prevent most of those colon cancers. We do know that the risk factors include age, so as we age, we're at increasing risk for colon cancer, and it's currently recommended that everyone around the age 50 have a screening, which we think colonoscopy is the most effective way of screening.
Now, you mentioned at 50. How often should we have it once we reach 50, we have the colonoscopy, it turns out fine? How often should that be repeated?
That's a great question. And the reason that we do a colonoscopy, not just to find colon cancers, I think maybe the more important reason is that we want to assess an individual's risk for developing polyps and therefore developing cancer over time. So that if an individual has a colonoscopy at age 50 and has no other risk factors for colon cancer, then they may not need to be screened for 10 years. Whereas other individuals who have certain types of polyps, we may need to look in a year or 3 years or 5 years. And most people will fall into that about a five-year category, but it's quite variable. And by assessing what type of polyps they have, we can better assess what their true risks are and minimize the need for frequent colonoscopies, but maximize the safety.
What are the risk factors? Who is most likely to get colon cancer and similar diseases?
I think it's a good question. One is the family history, and it's very strongly correlates, so that we currently recommend that anyone who has a first-degree relative, meaning a mother, father, brother, sister, who's had colon cancer, to have a colonoscopy probably 10 years before that relative had colon cancer. And for people who have relatives with colon polyps, maybe 5 years before that. And but those are two of the groups that are at increased risk. There are some disease processes like ulcerative colitis, Crohn's colitis, where those people need screening about 10 years after they've developed the disease. And then there are anyone who's noted blood in the stools or change in bowel habits should talk to their physician about the relative benefits and risks of evaluating the colon at that time, because those are what we call alarm symptoms that may be due to colon cancer, but more commonly are caused by benign processes like anal irritation or hemorrhoids or other processes, but warrant evaluation.
Now, when someone gets a colonoscopy and they may find a polyp or whatever, you can clip that polyp and remove it at that time and biopsy it and remove, and really, I guess you don't necessarily have to go back in there, do you?
No, we can painlessly, there's no discomfort associated, even removing large polyps with removing those polyps. And we send that tissue to the pathologist, and all the polyps are evaluated and assess the relative need for further colonoscopy.
You know,
we do remove every polyp every time, if possible. And there are occasional polyps that are too big or would be too dangerous to remove, and those require surgery, but that's uncommon.
And I can speak firsthand. I had, I think, my second colonoscopy a few months ago, and I remember going into the room for the procedure, and one of the nurses said, "You know, can I get you anything?" And I said, "Yeah." And being the smartass, I said, "Well, what better place?" I said, "How about a cup of coffee?" And the next thing I remember is her handing me a cup of coffee, and I'm saying, "Well, don't we need to?" I mean, it was so quick, so easy, no discomfort. We hear all of this and how onerous it is, and even the night before doing the evacuation, which you needed to do of the bowels, it was nowhere near as bad as it was, say, 10 years ago. I mean, the experience isn't as bad as the comedians of today would have you think, is it?
Steve, after doing this for a quarter of a century, I couldn't agree more, because that's a common response that I get from patients afterwards. They say, "Why didn't I do this sooner? My fears were really unjustified." And so that's a common theme, and I think your information is helpful to get the message out that it's really not that difficult to do, and it certainly could save your life.
Yeah, I mean, it's a no-brainer. It's one of these things where you've got this deadly disease that is eminently treatable early. It's I couldn't even say you can call it mild discomfort. I mean, it was quite easy to do, and it wasn't even a full day. What about lifestyle? Are there things we can do to help reduce likelihood of colon cancers?
We believe they are, and they are the same things that improve your cardiovascular health and health overall. But there are studies that look around the world at places where you have greater physical activity, and daily physical activity like walking may diminish the risk of colon polyps and colon cancer. A diet high in fresh fruits, vegetables, and fiber may diminish the risk of colon cancer. A low-fat diet may diminish the risk. And we do know that people who are overweight, especially the morbidly obese, are at increased risk for colon cancer. But alcohol is also a contributing factor, as is smoking. And I want to emphasize that none of these factors are so great that you should avoid screening if you have a perfect diet and you don't smoke. Because there's still, unfortunately, even though there are studies to show a diminished risk for malignancy with each of these things, they don't eliminate the risk.
No, certainly. And, you know, I had a family that did not drink, did not smoke, and my grandfather got colon cancer. How about men and women? Is there any kind of correlation between sex, or is it an equal opportunity disease?
It's an equal opportunity disease. You said it well. It's almost 50-50. So men and women both get this disease in about the same ages. So we do know that African Americans may be at increased risk for dying from colon cancer, so it's recommended that they be screened at age 45, even without a family history. Same may be true for Native Americans.
Well, you know, it's great advice. You've got a simple test that isn't is not a big deal to go through. Should people talk with their primary care physician, or should they contact a gastroenterologist independently? What's the way to do it?
I think the best way is to, exactly as you said, contact your primary care physician and get their advice as to who they think is experienced and safe. And I think that's the first best step. And if you have a relative who has not taken that step, encourage them to do that. And we have a website at stopcoloncancernow.com where you can get more information. But truly, your advice to see your primary care physician is the best one.
That's Dr. Daryl Wattis in conversation with our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. He's chief of gastroenterology and internal medicine at Banner Good Samaritan Regional Hospital in Phoenix. If you want more information, go to stopcoloncancernow.com. Steve Wiseman returns in just a moment, talking about a Jamaican lottery scam that you should be aware of. That's next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best. So take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast, and we're joined again by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Esquire. He's an attorney. He's an expert on so many things. He's written the book, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall, and he has a website that is called scamicide.com. And he's here now to talk about a scam that you should be watchful of. It's the Jamaican lottery scam. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, just this past week, the U.S. Senate Special Committee on Aging had a hearing dealing with the what we call the Jamaican lottery scam. And this is something I've been warning you about for a long time. It's been going on pretty much since about 2009. And originally it was about a $30 million scam per year. Now it's up to about $300 million. And what it is it's a phony lottery scam. And it's been preying particularly on older people. And I think one of the things that these scammers are doing in Jamaica is that they are getting phone lists of senior citizens in the United States. Interestingly enough, the Senate Special Committee on Aging is co-chaired by Senator Susan Collins of Maine, which is one state where they have particularly had great problems with this. They do about 30,000 calls that come up from Jamaica every day. Every day. That's 30,000 calls a day to the United States. This thing is very well organized. And what they do is they tell people that they have won a lottery. They've won this lottery, but they just have to pay some fees, some administrative fees, or maybe some taxes. Now, the problem with this is the whole thing is a scam. And one thing to remember is, well, I guess First of all, frankly, it is illegal to play foreign lotteries. So if you're called and told that you've won the Jamaican lottery or whatever, you haven't, and it's illegal to play it. Of course, think about it. How difficult is it to win a lottery anyway, and how even more difficult would it be to win one that you've never entered? So you got to learn to just say no. As a matter of fact, if you get the a call with the area code 876, which is where it in Jamaica is, you don't even pick that up. But in any event, what they would do is they would say that you needed to pay tax money, you needed to pay administrative fees. Legitimate lotteries either take the tax money out before sending you the money, or you're responsible yourself. You don't send them the money. And as far as administrative fees, they don't charge you that. But these the people, the criminals involved in this, have really come down hard and gotten people to send the money. So the thing to take away from it is, first of all, whenever you get a call about a lottery that you've won that you never entered, just hang up. Make it easy on yourself. But never, ever send any money into any of these. That's money you could just put right back into your pocket.
And it'll do you a lot better good in your pocket than it will in the hands or the pockets of these scammers. Steve, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Steve Wiseman, and on the topic of scams, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall, is one of his many books, and scamaside.com is a fabulous website for you to be up to date on the latest scams that are just coming off that assembly line of evil, the assembly line of evil. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Beverly Santinello, our producer. Thank you, Carol Marks, who created the entire show and is its host. Thank you to the entire Touch of Grey broadcast team, including, of course, Kevin Casey and so many other fine folks that make this program possible. I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups.